Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk to John Clayton, the professor. John, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
We're doing great. Looks like the third game on Thanksgiving is not going to be played. Tom Pelissero reporting that the Ravens disciplined a strength and conditioning coach for not reporting symptoms, not consistently wearing a mask, tracking device, etc. What do we know about what's going on there?
Yeah, it looks like it's a mess, and it looks like it's going to lead to some pretty substantial fines. But, you know, here is the strength coach, I guess, in the weight room, and he didn't have the mask on all the time. He had symptoms, and he didn't tell anybody about it. And so because of that, I mean, now you've got the spread of 70, because, you know, this is unlike anything we've seen since Tennessee, but now we get to the root of it, is that, you know, you could have had the Raiders. They had 8 players that were on the COVID list, 8 defensive starters on the COVID list. But in the end, it was really 2 players that tested positive. In this case, now you got 7 positives because apparently the strength coach, you know, opened the door for the virus to spread, and it's a bad thing. And right now, I mean, there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to play this game coming up. You know, being able to play this game on, because again, you know, you notice it was 2 positive tests with running backs on Monday, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins. Then, of course, you had 2 on Tuesday, 3 today. And so now the number increases. And if it keeps increasing, then they're going to have to really move some things around.
Nation, John, on whether or not they're going to play on Sunday.
What's that again?
When will they make the determination of whether or not they're going to be able to play it on Sunday?
Friday or Saturday. I think when it comes down to, you know, at some point, because remember, the team was going to leave tonight to fly to Pittsburgh, and that was, as you know, like 10 o'clock. But then, of course, you get the early round of testing, and you see that you have 3 tested positive. Then they come back, and you say, wait a second, you're going to be not able to have 7 players. You know, now 2 of those players were not going to probably play anyways, Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams, but you're going to have your 2 starting, your 2 centers out, 2 running backs out. You have to go with 2 practice squad players, but, you know, they don't care about that, which they really shouldn't. What they care about is spreading the virus. And now, with the fact that it's increasing and not decreasing, if they still get positive tests Thursday and Friday, then I don't know how they're going to handle it. I mean, you know, maybe they can take it to a Tuesday. That could be a possibility. But the problem is Baltimore has a Thursday game next week. Now they can move that to the weekend. Or with only 2 teams with bye weeks remaining, now we're at that stage where you have the possibility of now maybe just saying, okay, we're going to have a week 18 because this is such a big game.
Boy, it's a terrible year for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, losing Dak Prescott, certainly. And then they lose Marcus Paul, passes away at age 54, a guy who played, was a defensive back in the league about the time I played, and then he's the strength and conditioning coach, John. Just really sad news coming out of Dallas.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, what they did is they kind of shut things down yesterday because, you know, they rushed him to the hospital, Marcus Paul, and it was an emergency. And you can see how bad everybody feels about it because apparently he was very popular. I mean, Jerry Jones, I know, was hit hard by it. The players are hit hard by it. And, you know, at the young age of 54, this is sad.
Well, and do we know exactly what the circumstances
not
were?
Not yet, because, again, we're just finding out. Of course, he just passed away, so I don't know what exactly was the cause of the problem, but obviously there was a big problem.
Hmm. Well, no good transition away from that, but Dallas is the team, John, that you believe is going to be the NFC East champ. You think they got the best shot at it?
Only because of the schedule, not because of the team. Yeah. I mean, they do have talent on the team, obviously. I mean, they got one of the best 3 receiver sets in football. They've got, they're getting some health on the offensive line, but not much. You know, their defense has been a major disappointment. And offensively, you know, now you're, you know, at least with Andy Dalton in a schedule that you really only have 1 game against the winning team, you know, that could give them the chance to at least get in and sneak it out and get maybe to 6 wins.
Yeah, but they're not a winning team either. I mean, that's the thing. And that game with Washington, it's always a great Thanksgiving tradition. But 3-7 and 3-7 is yuck.
Oh, I know. But the interesting thing is, I mean, it is going to be interesting to see the quarterback battle, because it's Andy Dalton, who I don't think is bad. But, of course, you know, he had to miss two games because of a bad COVID experience and a positive test for him. And then you look at it, it's okay. The other one is going to be Alex Smith, who missed like 19 months, had 19 surgeries. And he almost missed 2 years, because I think when he got his first start, it was almost 2 years to the day when he had that just tragic leg injury. And so, you know, he's going to be on stage tomorrow. And honestly, it's like, you know, the team that Seattle plays on Monday, Philadelphia, you would think a couple weeks ago that team had the best chance to be able to win the division. But now they're 3-7-1, and they've got four games against winning teams, where Dallas has only one and Washington has less than four.
Brandon Allen, household name, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the new quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. I was going, Brandon Allen? I don't remember him. He's 28 years old, went to Arkansas, so, and I think he's only spent 1 year in the league with Denver, John.
That's correct, yeah.
And he is, you go from Joe Burrow to Brandon Allen, man.
I think that Allen, didn't he do some fill-in games last year for Drew Lock? I think he did.
Did he?
Yeah, but again, you know, talk about no names.
Oh, Drew Lock in Denver.
In Denver, yeah.
You are correct.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, he has been on the field, but nobody knows who he is. In fact, I mean, I would imagine if you would have a lineup and you would put Kyle Allen and Brian Allen out there, and maybe, you know, Brian Allen, the offensive lineman from the Rams, you probably wouldn't recognize who's who. Other than the big guy would probably be the
offensive. You might be able to determine the big guy out there.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of big guys, and I was thinking of Andrew Whitworth the other day. That was really a bad deal. I mean, his knee, is he done for the season, do we know?
No, I think it's kind of like in the mode of what you see with you know, Greg Olsen, is that he still can come back, but it's probably going to be more playoffs than anything else. I mean, it's not an ACL injury. It's an MCL injury. Okay. It's not a good one, but I'd say right now, you know, if he they're going to make the playoffs, obviously, so he could be back for the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I mean, he's an L.A. Ram and everything, but we all saw him, and we just remember Whitworth, just a good guy.
Great
and,
guy.
You know, whenever you see an older guy getting carted off like that, kind of like with Olsen, you go, oh, man, I hope this isn't it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I hope this isn't his last moment out
Well, particularly
on the field.
When the fact that he's 38 years old, and you figure, and he's on the last year of his contract, that this is going to be the last go around for him. And so you like it to go a good way, because he has been such a good guy and a good player for such a long period of time.
Yeah, getting carted off is never a good thing, young or old.
No.
It doesn't really make any difference. Hey, let's talk about the Seahawks and the Eagles a little bit. Chris Carson, you expect him to be back?
Yes, I do. Because, you know, from what Pete was saying, he was doing things on Tuesday. And, you know, and really, I mean, the only thing that was holding him back, probably more caution than anything else, is that he was running. And he's been really running straight ahead for like 3-4 weeks. But the cutting, you know, the cutting with that bad foot, that's one of the problems. And so I think he's able to cut. And the fact that he's, you know, kind of doing, I don't know if it's full practices, but he's doing mostly the practices that are needed. So I think he's going to be out there.
Yeah, you know, Pete was really fired up about him the other day. He was saying something like, oh, I wish you guys could see him. He is just killing it, everything. So, I mean, it seems like they went a little bit, they erred definitely on the side of caution with him, right?
Right. And you'll see this over the course of the next month, too, is that, you know, with these four games against bad teams, that, you know, they're not going to rush anybody back from an injury, because even though it may risk some things, you know, you still get the idea. It's like, okay, as long as you can get this team as healthy as it can and as good as it can be before the Rams game in week 16, because that's what they're gearing to try to do. You know, win these games, win the winnable games, and then go out and try to do the best they can against the Rams and try to be as healthy as possible. That's why, for example, I wasn't surprised that they put Quentin Dunbar on injured reserve for 3 weeks, because, yeah, you'd like to have him for the 3 weeks, but also, too, he's more important, most likely, for the games coming up against the Rams in San Francisco to end the season.
Well, and the other thing, too, is, John, all of a sudden you've got the way they're playing, it's starting to look crowded. Groz was bringing up, like, yeah, you can never have – that's not a problem when you can't figure out who to start, because you have to say Reed, I mean, he may be one of the better surprises, John.
Oh, yeah.
DJ Reed. Ugo Amadi's playing really well. You know, and really Trey Flowers. I mean, all of a sudden now he's starting to come on. You got Shaquille back, and, you know, maybe they can – sort of err on the side of caution with Quentin Dunbar, it seems like, because they're getting such good play out of their DBs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you saw that they were very cautious, and they've been that way all season, pretty much trying to be as cautious as they can with the injuries, realizing, okay, this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And so I think particularly when they had Jamal Adams around the bye week, I mean, my thought was, okay, that last game before the bye week, they weren't going to probably let him play because they wanted to give him the extra week to get in. And of course, now you can see that really worked out well. Did you see some of the numbers that he's been putting up? Obviously, the 5.5 sacks has been amazing, but I think he's had 27 pressures, something like that. I mean, it's almost like double the next person at 12.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and he's been playing up in the box and mm-hmm. playing everywhere. He played the edge really well the other day. And, you know, it looked like there was a miscommunication on that one touchdown where Chase Edmonds was wide open. And, you know, they can get that fixed. But I expect him to see them continue to do this, John. I feel like they've turned a corner, and that's really the biggest question. That's all we're talking about, right? We don't worry about the offense too much. Let me ask you this about getting back to the running game and Chris Carson. Let's say, I don't want to say Chris Carson gets, there's six games left, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say he's going to rush for 100, but let's say he gets, you know, combined all-purpose yardage of over 100, you know, maybe gets averages 70, 80 yards a game over the next six. What do you do? What do you do with him? And I guess it would depend about what happens with Carlos Hyde, how DJ Dallas develops, things like that. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just very interesting. With all the injuries and everything, it just seems like he's definitely not going to get that big contract.
No,
and I think he knows that. But
and I don't think he's going to get a long-term contract. I think it's going to be, you know, it could be just franchise tag or not, you know, and
what's the franchise tag number for a running back?
Well, it was 10.2 this year, but if the cap goes down more than $20 million, and if you remember this from 2011, you know, the cap was even. It's, you know, it went up to like 120.2 to 120.5, and, you know, that caused a 20% drop in all the franchise numbers. Mm-hmm. And so now if you're talking about, you know, down $20+ million, that could take the franchise numbers down 30-35%. And so that $10 million might be $7 million.
Wow.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. And so if that's going to be the case, I mean, you might want to consider that. I mean, clearly, if this cap goes down, which we know it will, what you're looking at is that they're going to be, one of the two guys gets franchised. I mean, either Shaquille Griffin, or it's going to be, getting this done with your running back in Carson. So that's where I think you have to make sure you keep both players if you can. And if not, you know, on the open market, it's going to be hard to say what anybody's going to get because, you know it's a diminished market right now. And you saw last year's market where the best guy as far as, you know, getting a deal, not talking about re-signing, but was Melvin Gordon at 2 years, $16 million. And so, now you look at it and you go, okay, are they going to be able to, get anything on the market when there's not going to be much of a market because of the lack of cap room?
Well, that's interesting. You think that it could come down to Carson or Shaquille Griffin, and now all of a sudden it brings it up. And I don't want to jump the gun here too much.
Yeah.
DJ Reed, John, has been fantastic,
mm-hmm.
really fantastic. And he's continuing to play. Trey's starting to play a little bit better. You got Quentin Dunbar. Now, all of a sudden, are you thinking differently about Shaquille Griffin, or are we just taking him way too much for granted?
Well, remember, it's like, okay, so you still have Quentin Dunbar to possibly re-sign, but you kind of get the idea with the injuries and all that. It's probably going to be a no, so you're going to have Shaq Griffin as a choice over him. Reed's under contract. That's the great part about it, because he's not like he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, to my knowledge. And so, you know, they have him. That's what the beauty of what San Francisco did for Seattle in putting him out there on waivers, to a point where, you know, remember, the top four cornerbacks for the San Francisco 49ers, including Richard Sherman, are all up. And they could have really used DJ Reed because, again, you can see he's got starting ability. And the Seahawks knew that from the moment they put the claim in on waivers.
The problem with the Philadelphia Eagles this year, the Seahawks are going to play on Monday night, is it just injuries or is it more than that?
It's more than that. I mean, there's so many things going wrong. I mean, you start with the injuries because it started the season. You know, they had injuries along the offensive line, Brandon Brooks being out, then 8 sacks on Carson Wentz in the first game. Then, of course, the receiving core, you know, they're getting nothing out of Alshon Jeffrey, and I mean, really, a lot of people thought they should have cut him, but they didn't, but he was injured for many weeks, and then he's now out there, and he's doing hardly anything.
Wait, John, you don't like Travis Fulgham and Richard Rodgers?
Well, Richard Rodgers is a tight end.
I know. Those are their two receivers, though.
Greg Ward is also
Wasn't Greg Ward like a quarterback at Houston or something?
That's correct, yeah.
I mean, those are their top three targets for Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's a problem. You know, Zach Ernst may be back this week, but he's been out for some time. Dallas Goedert, the other tight end, because they run a lot of two tight end sets, you know, he missed some time, had to go on injured reserve. They've had as many as four offensive linemen on injured reserve, so it's been a mess. But, of course, now what's becoming the big budding problem is how bad it is for Carson Wentz. There's now rumblings from inside the locker room that some of the players now have lack of confidence in Carson Wentz. Some don't like his personality. Some maybe don't think he works as hard. Whatever it is, I mean, he gets worse and worse to a point right now. Here's a $32 million quarterback that's got one of the worst QBRs in football and is really playing among the worst. He's been sacked 40 times. He's had 12 times where he has been intercepted, 5 times where he's fumbled, and he just makes bad decisions right now. And some people, I know Adam Schefter put this out today, that he thinks if this continues, something, and they don't go and make the playoffs, particularly in the division right now that could be won by 5 or 6 games, that something's going to give. It's either going to be, you know, Carson Wentz, which is going to be tough to do because of the contract, Doug Peterson, or it could be Howie Roseman, the general manager.
Mm.
And remember, they're $80 million plus over the cap next year.
And they're 3-6-1.
3-6. Yep.
Who knew? So Goofy was taken first that year, right? Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was first, and Carson Wentz was second. What is it with his personality? I mean, what do you think? You said something about him not working hard. He certainly looks lost out there, which I can understand because he's gotten sacked 40 times. Last year, I saw Johnny only got sacked 37 times the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and he's got 14 interceptions. He looks lost out there. But is there some question about his leadership as well?
Right now it is, yeah, because, I mean, it's like he's leading, but nobody's following. I mean, and again, it's like maybe they can't because they're all in the training room, not able to play. That could be one of the reasons why you don't have as many followers. But I think the thing that's worse right now is the decision making. I mean, his decision to take the sack in the end zone on the safety, that was bad. The interceptions have been bad. I mean, it's been really bad. And now, I mean, and there's not a fan, I think, of the Eagles anywhere that's supporting him. They want somebody else. They want Jalen Hurst.
It looks like the game of the week, since we're not going to talk to you again till obviously next week. Titans and Colts?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, because, well, I mean, they will have the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game. That's still going to be Sunday, 1:15, so that's still going to be good. But, yeah, I think the Titans and Colts play into that because, again, you don't know what Baltimore team you're going to have. I mean, you know, they won't be able to stop the run, and they're still questionable whether they're going to have two running backs who aren't just practice squad guys because Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins. So that's going to be a question. But no, Indy, Tennessee, because, you know, Indy won the first meeting, but now a little more drama coming into it. You know, Phillip Rivers didn't practice today because of that toe injury that was limping around with on Sunday. And you have DeForest Buckner. I mean, he's now got a positive COVID test. And the fact it's on a Wednesday, there's a decent chance that he's not going to be able to play Sunday.
Looking at some of these other matchups, John, Tua Tagovailoa at the Jets, and we like that there. But
and by the way, he's
jammed,
banged up. I mean, he's
going to say, doesn't he have a jammed thumb or something?
Jammed thumb, yeah. And so you kind of wonder, is he going to be able to start? Are they going to go with, you know, the now shaved, a little more shaven Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Oh, he shaved.
Well, no, what he did, he cut down his beard, and all of a sudden he looks like 10 years younger.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he still has a lot of hair, but not like he did before. Where he's like the wolf man.
I never could figure out how he kept his chin strap on.
Uh-huh.
That would just drive me nuts. Yeah, it's just not tight there. Anyway, 49ers at Rams. Any chance the Niners can give the Seahawks a little bit of help here with the Rams? I mean, Niners always well coached, and of course the Seahawks got to face them down the road. But, I always feel like they have such good coaching there.
Yeah.
even with some of the injuries there, that they can pull it off.
Yeah, because, I mean, today Eric Armstead came back off the COVID list. They almost had a two-game suspension for PED for Kawan Williams, and that would have even devastated him even more because he's a real good slot cornerback. But now it looks like he's going to be able to play because they've rescinded it. Something went crazy with the PED test and went positive for Williams, that he was able to play. But I still think with all the guys right now with COVID and everything else, I know Kyle Shanahan after practice today basically said that most of the other guys, other than the two that they activated today, probably won't be able to play, and so they're really going to be down some. Again, I've never seen a list that, you know, they were up to 28 players on some kind of a reserve list, and it's like 28. Now they got two back today, but then, you know, who knows? They may have to put a couple others on. Raheem Mostert may be able to come back and play this week. So maybe an outside chance that Richard Sherman can be there. And remember, say what you want about the Niners, they did beat the Rams the first time they faced them.
Got anything else for the professor? Roz?
I got a big announcement. Yes, big announcement.
Here we go.
John, how many years have we done a show together, would you say?
Oh, let's see. That would be...
I mean, that's the start of the year
We're talking 30 years.
At least 30
years. At least 30 years, because we go back to that 1991 Washington Husky team.
Yeah, the mock Rose Bowl that we faked. Yeah. That was great. And you're going back. You're doing your Saturday show again, right?
That is correct, from 8 to 11.
And I've been a guest on that show for 20 years, probably, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
How about if we renew that relationship?
I think that's going to be great because, you know, unfortunately, I don't have the daily dose of the Groz, which I miss so much. And so we can make it a Saturday with the Groz. And, of course, we can do it around 10:30 a.m.
Saturday at 10:30, back with John Clayton. It sounds good to me, buddy.
That sounds great. I've been looking forward to talking to you. And, of course, I hope everybody has a good, happy Thanksgiving. I hope, Dave, you have a good one and get a good walk in tomorrow. Yeah. And along with Dave, I hope everything goes. Mara, I hope you have a good one. Again, we'll see about the Patriots.
Thanks, you too, John.
So, again, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And I will be with you at Saturday at 8 a.m. going to 11.
Happy Thanksgiving, Professor. So glad to have you back, buddy.
Okay.
And I love having you and Groz together.
Yes.
Makes me feel all warm inside. All right. See you, Professor.
So sure that's what's making you feel warm?
Yeah, that's it. There's nothing else. I got a cold heart other than that, Groz. Hey, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. All right, coming up next, it's Washington Wednesdays, and we'll try to keep track of who's playing who in college football. Nobody knows better than Yogi Roth. That's next on it's called Wyman and Bob. I don't know. Maybe it should be called Bob and Wyman, because somebody was texting in saying that, yeah, that you usually do it alphabetical order. But, yeah, it's Wyman and Bob. That's what we're calling it, with Dave Grosby and 710 ESPN Seattle.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Dave Wyman and Dave Grosby, and one of our favorite, he's our favorite college football analyst, Yogi Roth. Yogi, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, for sure. Happy Thanksgiving. Thankful to have some time with you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, how's your baby?
He just departed my arms. I thought I was going to compete to do the interview with him in it again, but I'll just grab him so I can knock this out without you guys hearing him.
That's awesome.
He's doing great. Excuse me, man. Growing too fast.
Yeah. Well, hey, before we get to the Washington-Utah game, my co-host here, Dave Grosby, was kind enough to remind me the other day that 38 years ago was the play, which is the band on the field. Yogi, I was on the kickoff team. I always say this, I made three tackles. None of them counted. I really was only in on one of them, and they marked him down right there. But if you ever go back and look at that, 92, that's me. And it still pisses me off. You know, I still think about that. We could have gone to a bowl, Yogi, if we had won that game. John Elway, I think, would have won the Heisman instead of Herschel Walker, I thought. Anyway, yeah, just lamenting right now.
Hey, so I got two notes on that. I'll be brief. But one, on the actual game, so when you watch that, which I'm sure you've watched it one or two times, that play, there's a blonde guy who runs out for Cal late. His name's Andy Bark. He's a mentor of mine.
Okay.
And prior to that play, because you know what happened in that game, him and his teammate thought the game was over. So they left and started walking off the field.
Uh-huh.
And then they recognized that the kickoff was happening and he was on kickoff return. So he runs onto the field late. So that play like should have been blown dead for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
But possibly shouldn't even have happened. Right. But
that's all Dave needs to hear.
Totally. But to make it go better, tomorrow on the Pac-12 networks, and we haven't even announced it yet, but we have a feature on David Shaw and Justin Wilcox and their dads. And last year we mic'd up both of their parents. You know, their dad is, of course, a Hall of Famer, and Dave Wilcox and the great coach Willie Shaw. We mic'd them up as they watched the game. And it's an awesome piece. It's like great timing for Thanksgiving and family time. So look forward to that for tomorrow. It'll make you feel good about the big game to a degree.
Okay, good. Oh, that's awesome. So Utah and Washington, what do you think about the way they're handling things just in general, of kind of scrambling some of these games together, trying to find, you know, opponents who, you know, have enough, 53 that you have to have, you know, that are healthy or COVID-free. And just the way they've kind of been able to put this together, I think it's been pretty good considering, you know, what's going on right now.
Yeah, no, you have to give major props to, I think, the conference office, Mark Harlan and Jen Cohen. I mean, it's been all class from the beginning. You know, there's a lot of ways this can go down or, you know, has gone down in other conferences, right? You look at what's going on with Clemson and Dabo Sweeney and Mike Norvell. I mean, come on, man. Like, you couldn't, to me, like, be more disconnected to, like, what's going on in the world than complaining about your game being postponed because one of your players has COVID-19. And I look at what Jen is doing and, of course, Jimmy Lake and Kyle Whittingham. Like, it's just all class all day long, man. And so, again, we've talked about this many times. Just really proud to be part of the conference because they're doing what is best regarding the health and safety of the programs. And then also, like, the desires of the players, right? There's a big part of this. And I feel for ASU now, if your games all of a sudden keep getting postponed, you're not playing, and you only have two or three game season, like, there comes a point, I think, as a player where you're like, what are we doing? And I love that, you know, these two teams are making sure that their teams aren't getting to that place. And I think this weekend, the fluidity and the flexibility is a great example of that. So let's hope we get the kickoff, man, because things can get crazy over the next 24 hours, 48 hours, as we both know.
That's kind of the problem, isn't it, Yogi, that it just it's relentless. It doesn't slow down. It keeps getting worse, and they keep getting new roadblocks thrown in front of them to try and you know, move around.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, too. I was telling my wife, living in L.A., I came home last weekend from the Pac-12 Network studio, and I just felt like the whole footprint and even the city of L.A. shifted, you know, and it was like, you know, everything got ramped up again to a larger, kind of like it was, you know, early on when COVID-19, you know, really took over the country. So I'm with you, and I think that can allow sometimes, you know, us to overreact, to get really anxious and nervous. And I think what I love about our schools is that they're embracing that anxiety and nervousness and uncertainty and saying, okay, let's roll with it as best that we can and see if we can get some games. And I think the coaches, we got to give them credit because, you know, what coach wants, you know, 1 minute less than optimal amount of time to prepare, let alone days less than optimal time. I mean, there's a world where, you know, Colorado, you know, might not play SC. You know, they practice today, so I'd anticipate that happening. But if it doesn't, they might get a non-conference opponent that they have, you know, no history with, that they, you know, they probably are just beginning to scout. And that might be a real thing. And for the players, they're going to have a day to prepare for that. And I think the conference is doing whatever they can to make sure that they can get games. And I think the coaches are saying, you know what, not ideal, not perfect, but this year is clearly not ideal and the furthest thing from perfect.
Yogi, if memory serves, you have a deal where you talk to the coaches before games. And have you talked to Jimmy Lake? I heard him for the first time the other day, and I'm like, wow, this guy is an amazing communicator. And what are your impressions of him?
Oh, yeah. So every Friday prior to calling a game, you know, traditionally you meet with the staff of the home team. And I remember years ago meeting with Jimmy, and I turned to Ted Robinson, my longtime partner and our producer, Michael Molinari, and kind of we all said it at the same time of like, that's a head coach.
Yeah.
And you just knew it. And then right. Coach Peterson allowed me to be close to that program. And I got to know a lot of the coaches, obviously got to know him and to hear everybody talk about Jimmy. Then you watch how his unit would perform. And then I saw when Pete Kwiatkowski and him, you know, kind of swapped roles a couple years ago. fact that Pete stayed on and has remained on, it just really showcased the character that, and who Jimmy is. And then for me personally, getting to know him, you know, over the last couple seasons as an assistant and now as a head coach, you're right. I mean, a phenomenal communicator, a phenomenal motivator, and clearly a gifted coach. I think he's a rising star, and major props to Jen Cohen for making the move to go there, because she could have got a lot of current head coaches. A lot of people want this job. I mean, UW is a premier job in the country, and she said, no, let's stick with, you know, the program that we've built here and rebuilt here with Coach Peterson, that philosophy, and Jimmy's the perfect guy for it. And look at how he's recruiting. Look at the style of play they have. And look at how the players are competing. And that's the thing that stood out for me. You watch the Arizona game, most complete game I've seen on tape or on TV all season from a team in the Pac-12. Now, that's a limited data point. But that, to me, is a team reflective of their head coach. We knew they'd fly on defense, but to be physical, to not be frustrated if you're not moving the ball at a rapid rate, to say, hey, we're going to pound the rock, guys, and wear people out, they bought in. And that's because of what Jimmy is selling. And of course, the results have showcased that that's a, you know, an ideology that's proven to be successful.
All right, Yogi, real quick before we let you go, we got to jump to break real quick. Sorry, Groz, but what do you think? Utah, Washington, they're just pounding the ball, running it twice as much as they pass it. What do you think? Who wins this one?
Yeah, I think, you know, Utah, the biggest thing that happened to them, and I was preparing, I thought I was going to even call Utah versus ASU on Sunday. So I did a deeper dive on them this week. And, you know, when you look at them practice-wise, you know, in COVID-19, I think there's two worlds in COVID, right? There's the world where your team gets affected, you know, internally in terms of, you know, having an outbreak or a spread of sorts. And then there's the one where, like, your opponent has really been impacted. Utah has been impacted, right? So they weren't able to practice. They haven't had the repetitions. Then you add in Jake Bentley, who, you know, reportedly, you know, was the backup for about a month. So we didn't get a lot of the reps with the first team unit. And that's just the kind of the truth of who this team is right now. So I expect Washington to play really well and run the football and do exactly what you referenced. And I think they win. And to me, the biggest disgrace of the CFP from the first week was that Washington wasn't included. I mean, pick a team 20 through 25, let alone others, that you would say, yeah, you know, UW wouldn't beat them.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like that to me was just a lack of, you know, for the committee in their eyes, a lack of data points. But I think that's kind of BS, to be quite honest with you, because Ohio State probably would only need one game for a data point, and some of these Auburn might need one or two games for a data point. And I didn't think that Washington needed more than that, in my opinion, after what I saw. And I just think that when the committee, in my eyes, at least what's being said, is when they look at the Pac-12, it's what they haven't done, haven't beaten a ranked team, haven't played as many games versus, well, what did they do in those opportunities? And I think that's a dramatic difference between other conferences, specifically the Big Ten, with, you know, Ohio State's only played one more game than Oregon or USC. So kind of disappointing, and I'm hoping next week that's a bounce back for the committee as an opportunity for a little mulligan. And, you know, UW needs to play well for that to happen, because I do think they're easily a top 25 team.
I love that you always rightfully stick up for the Pac-12, Yogi. We really appreciate it. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your young one and your family, and we really appreciate you coming on, Yogi.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
That was him ringing the doorbell outside. He's like, let's go for a walk. What are
yeah.
we doing, Dad? Come on, man.
There you go.
So, I appreciate the time. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Same to you, Yogi.
Thank you.
There he goes, Yogi Roth. Coming up next, we're going to sweep the dial. There's three stories here, but all I see is Danny O'Neill is annoyed, and that's all I really care about. But there's some other good stuff in there, too. We'll sweep the dial. That's next on Wyman and Bob.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Let's say RC or me is great at making sweet potato pies, right? So they're going to invite her over tomorrow to make a sweet potato pie because she's the best ever making these pies. So she gives RC or me a list of ingredients to buy. Boom, 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 boom. Buy these things. She comes to RC's or me's house tomorrow. She goes into the kitchen. She looks at the ingredients. She's like, now you bought all this stuff right here and you want me to make a sweet potato pie? But you got ingredients for a pumpkin pie. You can't bring the greatest
no pumpkin pie
ever into your kitchen and you let him pick the ingredients and then all of a sudden you tell him, yeah, you gotta make a pumpkin pie. No, you bring the greatest cook in there to make the sweet potato pie. That's what you do with Tom Brady. You don't want him out there making pumpkin pies. That's not what made him become great. He has to make sweet potato pies.
There's Desmond Howard talking about pies and comparing Tom Brady, the great Tom Brady, to pies. Difference between a pumpkin pie and a sweet potato pie.
It was a lot of effort to make a small point.
Yeah. But everybody was laughing, so it was good radio, I guess. I don't know if that was television.
It was funny, but it was a lot of talk to make a point that Tom Brady's not a perfect fit with that offense.
Well, and I don't... I mean, he's always been in New England, I guess. So it's weird to see him, and it's not like
offense. He's right. He's only been with Bill Belichick.
Yeah, and so it's not like I see deteriorating physical skills. He looks confused. You know, to me that's what's so weird about that. I don't know, Mara. Do you think he looks that way? I mean, are we overreacting to? Because it just seems like he's had a couple of those moments on the big stage, won a Thursday night game and then a Monday night game.
As a fan watching Patriots games, I thought that he's been off on his deep ball for a little while now. He overthrows them sometimes, so that's why I thought they went to more of a dink and dunk offense. So yeah, maybe Arians needs to adjust a little bit to him.
But they are 7-4, so it's not like they're falling apart. Not like they're 4-6 like they are in New England.
I sure love their defense. I like Tampa's defense. I hope that the Seahawks start playing that way more consistently. But yeah, it's been weird to watch. By the way, I don't think I've ever had a sweet potato pie. How different?
Donna at the front desk has some today if you want to try.
She does.
Yeah.
Sweet potato pie.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Have you, Gross?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's the difference between, I mean, obviously one's pumpkin and one's sweet potato, but I guess...
It's not like the difference between a coconut cream pie. They're similar tasting.
Okay.
You'd like
which
try
you
it and tell me what you think. Pumpkin.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a pumpkin pie guy. I hate apple pie. Hate apple pie.
How can you hate apple pie?
You know, you'd think I'd be a lot thinner considering all the things I hate. I hate celery. I hate onions. I hate peppers. I hate...
hate onions?
Apple. Oh, God. Hate onions. Hate them.
Don't get him started, Gross.
Don't even get me started.
Oh, wait. We've had this. We went through this when we did the huddle and I got onions on my Subway sandwich.
Yeah,
exactly. And you freaked out.
Well, I did because it stunk in there. And then there's a whole story about the Cleel and Burger King where the guy put onions on. And it was like I was 30 miles away when I discovered it. And I still think about the guy who built my hamburger at the Cleel and Burger King. With malicious thoughts. But anyway.
It sounds that way.
Yeah, I'm pretty picky. That's one of the reasons why I don't like stuffing.
Me and my family, we're staying in a hotel. We didn't have a place to live, and we have a place to go for Thanksgiving. Morning of Thanksgiving, I get a couple text messages after work. One's from Tom Brady, who invites me over for Thanksgiving, and one's from Dev McCourty and Duron Harmon, who invite me over for Thanksgiving. When I'm weighing my options, I imagine them walking into the two spaces. I imagine walking in Tom's place. They wouldn't have anything that has starches in it. They probably serve avocado toast, avocado ice cream, avocado bagels, avocado turkey, avocado ham. Everything that you could possibly put avocado in, he probably had that. And I knew Dev and Dude, because his mom was coming to town, all his families were coming to town. I knew that they was going to have fried chicken. I knew that they were going to have mac and cheese. I knew that they was going to have candy yams. I knew that they was going to have cornbread. I knew that they was going to have Kool-Aid. But I imagine like there'd be a lot of people laughing, rejoicing, there'd be a yak. And, you know, Hennessy, and I imagine at Tom's house, there's rosé. So, you know, so that was like the difference in the balance. And Hennessy sounds a lot more fun than rosé. So when I was measuring the way I want to spend my Thanksgiving, I chose to go over to Dude and Dev's place.
So was he talking about the McCourty twins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then another teammate, Daron Harmon.
Okay. And he said they had Kool-Aid?
Kool-Aid. Hennessy versus rosé was another good one. No starch.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah, that was Martellus.
Unlike the Desmond Howard thing, that was really funny.
That was Martellus Bennett, Michael Bennett's brother, and I wonder what that household was like growing up with those two guys. I mean, both so
lot of talking.
Funny. Unfortunately, I saw Michael in one of the opposite state of that when he threatened Jim Moore. But
yeah,
we still have that on file around here somewhere. But
I remember that.
Oh my gosh, I was ringside, Groz. I thought I was going to have to like try to tackle Michael Bennett and probably suffer not only a pounded in face but a separated shoulder or something, all because of Jim and his dumb behind. So
right.
But anyway, it was quite an experience there. But the Bennett brothers are so funny, man.
They really are.
Aaron Rodgers epitomizes why I find him to be such a smug and unlikable public persona here as he starts talking about no-look passes.
Late in the game, they wouldn't show it because I play for the Packers, but I had a pretty sweet no-looker to Devontae on the last drive that I'd kind of set up for a few plays because Darius is so athletic side to side. He loves reading your eyes, and I just kind of came back and looked left and then looked outside him on the right and threw it behind him to...
I'm so thankful Patrick Mahomes brought that into the NFL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Good for him.
Yeah, I know. It's just none of us can do it for him.
Lame. Such a lame thing. Bunch of. It's rich of me to criticize anyone for being like cackling in the background. Because I know I'm obnoxious. But that's really obnoxious.
Yeah, because nobody's been doing that for a long time. Let me sit here while you puff your cigar, and I'll drink my high-priced sipping liquor.
God!
Hey, this happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Yes, you're definitely annoying, Danny, but I'm with you on that. Yeah, you don't go and toot your own horn that way. I'll say this, though.
No.
Groz, I'll say this, that all of a sudden, Russ has been doing that. Russ has a few throws like that, and I always say that Patrick Mahomes is making Russell Wilson-like throws, but I don't know. Mahomes has a way of doing it that's just a little bit more exaggerated, that he throws a little bit further across his body. But what do you make of Aaron Rodgers? Do you like him or not, Russ?
As a player?
No, as a person. I mean, of what you know.
Of what I know of him as a person, he seems very difficult. He seems like a very prickly...
Yeah.
Unlikable, unhappy guy.
Well, he was really nice to Jim Moore a couple years ago when Jim was the only one in the media scrum. And he's like, well, let's get started, Jim. How you doing? You know, and just chatted with Jim, kind of joked around with him and everything. He's a Northern California guy, which is where I grew up.
But he went to Cal.
But he's a Cal guy, but still. I had lots of friends that went to Cal. And you know, it was actually some of my best friends and roommates that I had in the NFL were from Cal. Keith Kartz, who was our center in Denver, he was a Cal guy. Tim Lucas was a Cal guy, who was my other roommate. But I don't know whether I like him or not because it's weird. His family doesn't like him. It doesn't seem like it anyway. But we better get...
like. I mean, what? Yeah, when you talk about someone who doesn't like their family or back and forth or the other way, there's something off there.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, coming up, we got the player spotlight. By the way, Mac and Jack's, this happy hour brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up next, we got our player spotlight with Carlos Hyde, and then we're going to follow that up with either story time. We might take some calls. Groz is going to revisit some of his best turkey moments as far as Thanksgiving goes. We'll talk about food, all kinds of stuff. But coming up, we got Carlos Hyde. That's next on Wyman and Bob.